Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Tuesday, September 3rd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs, with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Tuesday, so I guess it is a special edition of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, founder of First statethatsupply.com. And he normally comes on every single Monday, but we know yesterday was a holiday. It was Labor Day, and I do hope you had a wonderful weekend with family and friends over this long weekend that I think most of us had and enjoyed. It was really hot in here at the RV resort. Let me tell you, I think every single spot was taken. If so, there may have been one or two that were left open, according to the office down at check-in. But it was really happening and popping, and looked like everybody was having a great time. We had beautiful weather. They said we might get a little bit of rain, but we had a little shower early. It must have been Saturday morning, and that was it. So we were blessed with wonderful weather. It is clear and sunny right now and cool. There's a cool breeze. Definitely loving this fall weather here in the Northeast Georgia mountains. So glad that you could join us today, and I hope you had a great weekend as well. We've got great programming for you all week. This week and today, of course, special Tuesday edition of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. We've got a great topic today as well that should be very helpful for us when trying to kind of home diagnose, if you will, maybe what's wrong with some of our chickens if they ever become ill. Difference between some of the, I don't want to say more common, but more common diseases, illnesses with chickens. That'll be today's show. Tomorrow we've got another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. This coming Thursday, the first Thursday of the month, we've got poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, coming on. And if you'll give me just a second, I'll try to see if I can find what the topic is this Thursday. So let me give me just a second, and I'll try to go over here if I have this particular jump drive plugged in with my files and try to see. Here we go. I think this is her file regarding the episode, September the 5th, Poultry Genetics and Breeding. Again, this topic is going to be coming to us from a poultry scientist and professor, small flock specialist, Poultry Genetics and Breeding, with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. That's going to be this Thursday. So you're not going to want to miss that show, especially if you do breed your chickens. Maybe you show chickens, but it's going to be a very interesting show this Thursday. So that's going to be this week's programming. We hope you can tune in every day at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is now September. Jen has started her curriculum with homeschooling Caleb. Yes, he is just two, but even the state of Georgia has standards for two-year-olds, believe it or not. But so we went out and made a few purchases for his homeschool and homeschooling supplies, and she's actually blogging about it, and she's even creating curriculum for some teachers out there, and she sold quite a bit last month on a couple of sites that cater to that, so very exciting. And she's got a blog that she's writing along the way with her homeschooling journey with Caleb. It's called the RV Classroom, and all kinds of great information. I'm very proud of her. It's doing very good. She's been a career teacher for about a decade now, and is going to be a stay-at-home mom, whatever that means. You know the drill. But she also is selling some curriculum to other teachers online and blogging about her homeschooling with Caleb. And so she's got her website up and everything else, The Learning Wagon, if you're interested, www.thelearningwagon.com. And you can go there to that website. She also has a Facebook page, The Learning Wagon. So you can, if you homeschool, which a lot of our listeners do, I just want to say again and send a shout out to all our homeschoolers out there that listen to the show every day at 12 and incorporate this radio show with your daily curriculum. So we want to say a special shout out to all the homeschoolers. Also, while we're sending out shout outs to the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the archive show, we thank you very much for doing so, and want to send a shout out to you. Keep the rubber on the road. We thank you very much for tuning in while you're hauling that freight all around the country. Send a shout out to our chat room chickeneers. Love you guys. Thanks for coming in the chat room and making it nice and lively in there, as well as our archive listeners. You can listen to all 860 episodes at iTunes.com, podcast.com, zoom.com, and of course right here at blogtalkradio.com. And last but not least, want to send a shout out to all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live daily. We thank you very much for doing so. And I hope business is very well. Looks like Christmas Chick in the chat room just ordered 25 more chicks and 25 keets. How cool is that? And Catherine is joining us again. She finally got a computer with some sound hookup, so she's joining us after about a month or so with no equipment. So thank you very much. She says chicken raising is a part of their homeschooling there. So, yes, we do have quite a bit of homeschoolers that listen to the show. And Red Hawk's joining us again. Becca Boo is welcome. I know she's normally working very, very hard. In fact, Becca Boo in the chat room, when we were on our Florida tour, we actually stopped by her home. She was gracious enough to let us stop in, and she fed us, and we had some great conversation. We saw her backyard coop and her chickens, and we had a grand old time. Yay, Becca, got in the chat room. Very good. Thank you for joining us. But we had a great time. I'd like to get back down there to her place. Very nice young lady, and a great little setup in her backyard. And she's actively working with her city to try to increase the number of chickens that they're allowed to have. So we wish her the best of luck as well. So let's get over here to the phone lines. It is 10 after the hour, and we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Write that down, folks. FirstStateVetSupply.com. FirstStateVetSupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And that is my opinion as as your gracious host today. But lots of great information. What makes that store different than others is that every item you purchase will come with specific directions for your backyard flock. The directions on the bottle may say mix in 600 gallons of water. Okay, try doing that in the back of your subdivision, you know, your home. So everything that you're going to get, the medications and the electrolytes, the vitamins, the essential oil, everything will have specific directions for you, the backyard chicken owner, the small flock owner. So that itself is worth its weight in gold. So check it out, and all the products come back with Peter Brown's awesome and extensive long time, probably at least a couple of decades, probably even further than that, maybe 30 years of poultry management. So where else can you get that at any other store? Probably nowhere that I can think of. Absolutely not. So FirstStateVetSupply.com. Let's go ahead and give Peter a good old chicken whisperer welcome. All righty, give me just a second. Let's see if I can get this thing to spin on this. There we go. And he is live with us now. Peter, thank you for coming on. Hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend with your family.
I did, Andy. Kind of quiet, but that's the way I kind of like it anyway. So
that's the way it should be, yeah.
Looks pretty well to me.
We saw a lot of people up here that came up, and some had kids and were very, very active, and some just whenever we rode by and looked at their little site, they were lounging in their chairs, either watching a football game or just kind of sleeping, taking naps, reading books, or relaxing in wonderful weather. So, yeah, to each their own, however you enjoyed it. I hope you you all enjoyed it, our listeners as well. So we got a really interesting topic today with you, and it's really a comparison, which is really good. Not that I could ever myself try to diagnose issues with my chickens in most cases. I'd probably be calling you. But the issue there is for folks that they've heard the past podcasts on all of these specific illnesses and diseases that we're going to be talking about today. But today's a little different. You're going to be talking about maybe some key differences, maybe even signs and symptoms and treatments and things of these illnesses and diseases that we've gone talked about extensively in past podcasts. But today, just kind of a difference between the two that might make it a little easier to process of elimination between what it might be and how to treat the birds. So we're definitely interested. So folks, get your pen, paper, and those Chicken Whisper notebooks out so we can take lots of great notes today. If you miss something or if we go too fast again, the show will be archived later this afternoon for your listening pleasure 24/7. So we're ready, Doc.
Yeah, this topic, we've been over these several diseases, the CRDMG, the LT, laryngotracheitis, the coryza, Roop, whatever you want to call it. We've been over them numerous different times. I get asked the question every now and then, is it possible to have, more than one disease at the same time? And, generally, it's possible to have a whole bunch of them at the same time, but generally we see these things by themselves for the most part, or complicated with another bacteria, mainly E. coli or something like that. And when you see the CRDMG basically complicated with E. coli, then you really have a true case of chronic respiratory disease, okay? So you would actually end up with two different types of bacteria within the same bird causing havoc. The LT itself is a virus, and you don't often see generally this complicated with something else. For instance, in the commercial sector, if there's generally an outbreak of LT, it's because the birds either weren't vaccinated and were exposed, or somebody didn't use the right vaccine and the vaccine caused the problem, which can occur, especially with the LT. So it isn't always something that is there with something else. Coryza can be. Coryza, Haemophilus paragallinarium, you don't need to know that big name, just throw it out there. That's the scientific name for it. Most people call it coryza. The old-timers might call it Roup. It really doesn't matter what you call it. It's a bacteria, very hardy, sticks around for quite a while, and wreaks havoc with the birds. These basically, what we're looking at here is three different respiratory issues, two of them caused by bacteria, although the two bacteria are quite different. The CRD organism is a mycoplasmal or mycoplasma bacteria. What that basically means to you is just a couple of things, is that it has no cell wall, so it makes it much more fragile. Therefore, its mode of spread is a little bit harder for it because it doesn't live well outside the bird's body. And so when it doesn't live so well outside the bird's body, in this particular instance, its main accepted route of spread would be through the hatching egg. And it's a little bit of what we call a sleeper disease, meaning that if the eggs that were being hatched and the chicks that were hatched from those eggs came from breeders who had an active ongoing infection at the time that the mating took place, that there was a very high probability that the chicks would be infected. The problem is that you could test them right after they come out of the shell and they test negative, and they keep testing negative all the way out until something triggers that within the bird, and then, you know, it'll start showing itself to you. And usually it's stress, the stress of just the pecking order in the flock, something changes, sexual maturity, birds starting to crow and show their spunkiness around the yard can trigger an outbreak of Mycoplasma gallisepticum, MG or CRD, whichever you want to call it. So I've run into this in the last 3 or 4 weeks, a problem where flocks were, in maybe one or two cases, were knowingly infected with MG. In other words, they knew they had it. But birds from the outside were brought in who were carriers of the LT, and then it was Katie bar the door. I mean, it was just a mess, and in some instances to this moment still continues to be a mess. I can't say it enough, and we've said it on this show many, many times. Andy, it'll come to your thoughts immediately when I say it. You need to be very, very careful who you buy birds from, where you buy the birds. You need to look them over. You darn near have to turn them inside out. If a person doesn't want you handling their birds, if they don't like the way you're handling the birds in relation to looking in their mouth and their eyes and in the vent and all over the feathers and the body and holding the nostrils closed and see if they bubble in the eyes and that kind of stuff, then don't buy them. Because I can almost guarantee you, if somebody has an issue with you doing that, they are not selling healthy birds. And if they have an issue with it, you can explain to them very easily, just like I'm explaining to everybody now and have explained this numerous times. And I don't mind keep saying it, because a good general reminder with this stuff doesn't hurt anybody. But if the birds are ill, just leave them there. Leave them there. If you're going to somebody's premise and their place isn't as good, if not better than yours, keep going. You're not obligated to stop there and buy. Yeah, you said you'd stop by and you were going to pick up some birds. You changed your mind. Everybody does that. You know, it is going to save you tons and tons of time, money, grief, anguish over the birds that you've had for many, many years, or your bloodlines that are now infected with things that are extremely difficult to control, get rid of, and medicate for, and especially if you have more than one. And these last few instances that I was talking about, we were looking at LT and CRD together, and another one we were looking at CRD or the MG, whichever you want, way you want to call it, complicated with possible coryza. And in this particular case, I knew that wasn't true, and urged the owner to twist the arm of the laboratory to test for LT, and by God, it came back positive for LT. But they had the mycoplasma at the same time, which just complicates things so dramatically, because mm-hmm. you medicate for the mycoplasma and you get that under control, but the LT is still going wild. And technically, there's only one way to get around it. And I get reluctant to tell people, you know, the only way to stop it is to vaccinate, because when you're mycoplasma positive and you vaccinate, you can trigger this whole thing all over again. So that's what brought up this whole conversation of trying to help folks decipher what's going on. The one flock, we knew that some of the birds were mycoplasma positive, but the LT in that particular flock was not spreading like normal. But it's an interesting thing with that one. So it leads me to believe, and you can make these judgments after doing this for so many years, like I have. And so I'll give you, for instance, here. There are two different types of vaccines that are available for vaccinating for LT. One is what we call the hot vaccine, which is made from chick embryos, which makes it a vaccine that makes the birds carriers, and is a very harsh vaccine. Even when you give it to the birds, the reaction in the birds just hunker down. It can linger for days and days and days, and even into weeks. So that's called a vaccine reaction. The other one is a tissue culture, much, much milder, and the preferred method of vaccination. What people don't understand about a tissue culture vaccine is generally it'll call for two doses, and the reason for that is because it's an extremely mild vaccine. It's designed to give the bird some of the virus exposure, let it build some immunity to it without overwhelming the bird, and also in this particular one particular type of vaccine at least has a long history of not being and not making carrier birds. The problem comes in when you get birds on your farm from a person who has used the chick embryo vaccine, and your birds end up with it. So we look at the vaccine strains. One really does a number on you, and the other doesn't. I suspect, for whatever the reason, in this one group where it didn't spread around like it normally would, the LT portion of this thing, that it was probably, for whatever reason, one of the tissue culture vaccines, and there are several different ones, and that probably was, you know, double dosed or whatever. Sometimes that will make a bird a carrier as well because of the dosing. So it's my thinking, can't prove it, but it's my thinking that this particular group of birds did not get the exposure due to the fact that this vaccine is mild, and that the couple of birds that were exhibiting this were vaccinated more than likely with a very mild strain of the LT. Whereas in these other flocks, one was a natural exposure, so that was a field strain, could have come in as well from a chick embryo vaccine strain. But at any rate, one of the other flocks, it just went through them like wildfire. I mean, it was just, you know, and the mycoplasma being on top of that just complicated things to a crazy extent. So, again, this is why this all came about. This is why I wanted to talk about these three things. It's kind of leaving Karai's out here at the edge for the moment. The one flock, the veterinarian in charge of the diagnostics was insisting that it was, in their opinion, coryza. And when asked and arm-twisted to run the test for LT, it came back positive for LT. And I based my decision as to what was going on in that particular flock on the fact that they had had a very mild outbreak of LT the year before, but they didn't do anything about it. And this year it came back to bite them big time. And, you know, to my knowledge, they still haven't done anything about either issue. And, you know, down the road they'll end up paying for it again. This particular time, it kept them from going where they wanted to go with their birds, travel-wise and so on, because they had this outbreak that was very, very difficult to control. And the only thing in it that they could control was the mycoplasma part, because it's the only thing you can really medicate for. But, you know, not vaccinating for the other two items, and, you know, this stuff will cycle back through the flock again, and they'll go through the same thing next year, and, you know, maybe by the third time around they'll learn. But it's just one of those things that... So what I want to do is try to compare some of... And herein lies part of the problem. A lot of the symptoms from one of these diseases mimics the other two, or the other two mimics the other one. So we want to look... When we try to decide, you know, how we're going to make a decision as to what we have, we're going to use a couple of different things in conjunction with each other. And none of it, I want to make this crystal clear, none of it is 100% positive, but it gives you a good idea what's going on. So let's take a look for a moment at the CRD or the MG organism. It's a very unique organism, has no cell wall, as I said earlier. This makes it very fragile, very easily disinfected against. When we did a show on it, I went over some information that I had gleaned from the University of Georgia, Drs. Clevin and Glisson, two world experts on mycoplasma. These guys have been doing it so long, I'm sure they do it in their sleep. They have developed over the years a lot of the testing and methodologies for these things, help vaccine companies develop vaccines and so on and so forth, and do a lot of the testing for some of these companies as well, and you know, look at these things and help the companies decide whether something is going to be a viable product or not. But these guys, you know, they know what they're doing, and they had at the university there, they had done some research work to show how long the organism lived outside of the bird's body, and by and large, it's not very long on different inanimate objects, asphalt, concrete, hay, straw, this, that, and the other thing. And it's, you know, you're talking a matter of hours in some cases and a matter of minutes in others. So it's not a good spreader. So therein lies a key component of how you will make a decision as to... And again, bearing in mind that it's not rocket science here and this is not overly scientific, but it gives you a good indicator of where to start. You got to have a starting point. And so if you look at a particular disease and it's spreading very, very rapidly through a flock, in other words, you come out today and you got a couple of birds that are exhibiting some symptoms of a particular disease, snotty nose or whatever, and you come out tomorrow and there's a preponderance of those birds with it, you know, mycoplasma will not be the first one coming out on my list. I'm going to look for something else that spreads that quickly. And in that case, I would look for LT and coryza as ones that spread. Doesn't mean that the CRD can't be there with something else pushing it. And that's what we had in these other flocks. We had the mycoplasma, the LT being pushed along by the mycoplasma, and mycoplasma pushing the LT. And so we had something spreading very quickly amongst the birds, showing a whole lot of symptoms. They had it all. They had the coughing, the gasping. Interesting, in some of the flocks, there was no blood being exhibited in the mouth, which you might see with LT. So when we look at the CRD, it's a mycoplasma bacteria having no cell wall, spreads slowly as a general rule, okay? It is highly host dependent. That's why it doesn't live well outside the bird's body, besides the fact that it is it has no cell wall to help protect it from the elements or any disinfection. So, and what that means by being host dependent is it does not have within that cell all of the mechanisms that it needs to survive on its own. It must depend on the host to get some of its nourishment from it, amino acids, vitamins, and so on. Heat, moisture, all of those things that are necessary for cell growth come from the host. And it's, so it's what we call a highly host adapted bacteria. Okay? And it just really depends on the chicken for its primary survival. So you'd see some nasal discharge, watery eyes, maybe some swelling around the eyes, coughing, sneezing, rattling. Sometimes they'll get severely congested. But the key is it's generally slow spreading. It comes on slow, spreads slow. If there are other underlying factors with the birds, immune system being compromised because birds were exposed to marex and possibly had recovered without showing any symptoms, and it is possible to do so. Marex is an immune deficiency a virus. It does affect the immune system as well. All of those things will play into how you're going to make a decision as to, you know, what goes on in that particular situation within a flock. And it takes time, you know, and again, get the 5-gallon bucket out, sit there and listen, look, handle some birds. Certainly don't go in a pen of sick birds and go to a pen of birds that are not sick. Isolate birds as best you can. If you have the opportunity and a room to pull sick birds out, pull them out. Another method of controlling an outbreak, whether it be CRDMG, LT, coryza, or any other bacterial type of a viral type of a situation, is to open a place up and get more air. You can also use oxine in a spray form. Okay, you can use it in the drinking water. All of these things. Nasal flush it if you have to, particular birds. See, most of the time, you really wouldn't want to get this stuff going because see all the work I'm laying out here for you, and we haven't gotten to the other two diseases yet. I mean, these things are going to be time-consuming, laborious, and expensive.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they just are. And so, you know, that's part of the reason, again, why we want to talk about these today, to try to get people to understand. You don't need to know all of the little ins and outs and ups and downs because they mean nothing at the end of the day. I was trying to explain the other day on one of the sites, they were talking about Marek's disease, and I've done a lot of work with some people on that, and everybody seemed to be getting it, and along comes somebody wanting to know what strains of Marex cause what symptoms in each bird, and my reply was, "What's the point? Who cares? It's a non-starter. I mean, if you knew, what would you do about it? There's nothing you can do about it, and no laboratory is going to diagnose it for you in that fashion. A laboratory that is used to looking at Marex is going to open a bird up. Oh, yep, there it is, right there, and there it is over there, and there it is over there. Yep, it's Marex." They might run some histopathology or something like that, but still not going to tell you what strain it is or what serotype it was. There's no point to it. So at any rate, you want to take a look at some of these things, and you want to know the little nuances here. What makes one different than the other? And I think therein lies your ability to make that decision for yourself. If you've got something that's going through the flock rapidly, you want to look at things that do go through flocks rapidly. You don't want to waste your time looking at something that isn't really going to move around very quickly because it's probably going to waste your time. What would we use to control CRD? You can use Denagard. You can use gallimaisin powder. You can use oxytetracycline concentrated form. You can use tetracycline. Here's a little tip for you as far as this is concerned. If you're in a position to do so and you have some birds that you suspect have CRD, if you have some injectable penicillin, you could give them some injectable penicillin, and if the birds get miraculously better, the chances of you having CRD are probably going to be pretty slim. And the reason for that is that the mode of action of penicillin is to destroy the cell wall. With this organism, if you truly had CRD, there would be no action of the penicillin against the organism because there's no cell wall to destroy. You might get some momentary relief if it were CRD, generally by the fact that there may be a secondary bacterial infection of E. coli or something else, so the birds may appear for a little bit to be better, but they generally don't get over it. I've never seen it happen that way, anyone, a true case of CRD. So that might be a little bit of a diagnostic tool that you could use to try to separate one from another. If you were to give that shot and the birds got miraculously better, then I'd start looking at E. coli, coryza, or something along those lines. It would do nothing for the LT because you're looking at a virus there. So those are some of the things that you could use. You could use spectinomycin. You could use lincomycin and spectinomycin together, which was better known as LS50. Any one of those for CRD should get you going. Thailand water soluble would be another one that would be good for those kinds of things. So those are some of the things that you want to look at there. LT is a virus that spreads rapidly, like wildfire amongst birds. One today, everybody tomorrow, as a general rule. When that doesn't happen, in my opinion, you have to start looking at it being an isolated problem that was probably caused by exposure to a bird or birds that had been vaccinated probably fairly recently with one of the LT vaccines. Because generally most of the field strains are pretty nasty and they go through a flock pretty quickly and start showing you all these different symptoms. The LT can take as many as 10 days as far as incubation is concerned. The route of infection usually with LT will determine the severity of the disease and how quickly the incubation time is going to pass. We have seen incubation times with LT depending on where the bird is originally infected with the virus. So generally you're looking at infection taking place through the eye, the conjunctiva of the eye, the nostril, and the mouth. When it's a situation where the virus is taken in through the bird's trachea, we usually look at a much quicker incubation time. And the reason for that is that the LT virus loves the lining of the trachea. That's generally where it sets up shop. So when the infection takes place through the eye or through the nostril itself, rather than directly into the mouth and stuff, you can see incubation times that might be a little bit longer. That doesn't mean it's going to slow the disease down as far as its virulence and stuff is concerned. That will depend on the bird's immune system. That will depend on the strain, whether it's a vaccine strain or whether it's a field virus that the bird was exposed to. That will determine how quickly some of these things will transpire. But generally speaking, you're going to see if it settles down in the trachea first, that's probably going to be the most severe. LT causes bleeding in the trachea, and we've talked about this before. When you look at the trachea itself, the inside diameter being roughly the diameter of a number two lead pencil, the old yellow lead pencils we used to take to school. And from there, the tubing, so to speak, the trachea and the bronchi, the mesobronchi that lead to the lungs get smaller and smaller. And by the time you get down to the mesobronchi, you're looking at something smaller than the lead in that yellow pencil. So you start putting liquid in the trachea and sticky blood and letting it roll downhill, going to places where it can't be really coughed up very well and no place for it to go but into the bronchi and the mesobronchi, which are just the smaller tubes down going to each lung. Guess what happens? Cuts off the air, the bird dies. And so with LT, you generally will see a lot of gasping, especially if there is bleeding. You may or may not see blood in the mouth. Depends on the severity of the virus. Some gurgling, conjunctivitis, which is an inflammation of the tissue around the eye, watery eyes, this depression that they get. They're just off their feed and water. They're not really interested in too much in eating and drinking, and just kind of hang around, take on that cyanotic look, dark comb generally. Won't be bright red, that's for sure. One of the other tip-offs for this disease, too, is there's two of them that make it stand out from everything else. So when we start looking at it in comparison to CRD, three things that generally happen with LT that don't, okay? CRD, no blood in the trachea at all, none, zero, okay?
Mm-hmm.
CRD doesn't spread very quickly. LT, like wildfire, okay? The third thing is the birds have a tendency to sit on their tail, sit back, stretch the neck out in front of them with an attempt to breathe. That's because whether it's mucus or whether it's blood working its way down the trachea to the bronchi, mesobronchi, and that's in that area, the bird is struggling to breathe. Okay, and they may even lay their head out in front of them because they can't. They're looking for a way to get this stuff out. They can't. They're looking for a way to keep breathing. One of the other things that is different from CRD that comes to my mind here as I sit here talking to you is that they make a cawing sound. It's an odd sound that they make that they would not make when they have the CRD. So there are some nuances here. This is what I was talking about before. Knowing
right.
the differences, these little tiny things that may trigger a thought in your head to look at and say, hey, this is LT, this is CRD. And again, it's possible to have the two. And when you have the possible the two, it just complicates it, makes it worse. Now you can't hardly separate them out because, oh, my God, I got this, I got that, I got this, I got that. One of the things that I think people need to understand is to, with all of this, is that make a decision and act on it. I get this question from people all the time. Well, what if I'm wrong and I do this? And my answer is, what if you don't? And then this happens. Mortality mm-hmm. starts setting in. It is, in my opinion, much better to be proactive and do something than to stand around wringing your hands wishing you could do something. And then after the bird dies, when you've done nothing, then your remorse is even worse. It's, and from my perspective, it's much better to have done something than to have done nothing. So
mm-hmm.
the quicker
mm-hmm.
you jump on it, the quicker you can get it. And if you've got to change course, fine, you can change course. You can always change. You can always change. But once the bird dies, it's a done deal. It's too late then. And just like horse racing and every other sport out there, it's always your best to break down. It's always your best that go first. And that's because they are in their tip-top condition. Their immune system might be, from stress and everything else, might be under a little bit more of an attack than you might think. Just as in humans, stress in humans causes more diseases than people really realize. And the stress that a person walks around with every day, when you stress yourself out for all the little things in life that should be kicked to the curb and not worried about, you open yourself up for other problems disease-wise that come along, whether it's a chicken, a duck, a turkey, or a cow, or whatever. A human. Doesn't make any difference. So therein lies all of these things. So you can start to see and shape things in your own mind when you start looking at things. And again, there is no more valuable tool in your toolbox of chicken tools than your 5-gallon bucket and your time.
Mm-hmm.
There really isn't, And from my perspective, having done this, for a long, long time, if you jump on something and you take an aggressive stand on it right off the bat, stop it before it gets a toehold. You're much better off than to monkey around with all the, all the other things and things that are going on out there, and trying to get out the good information, solid information that you can bank on. Is a difficult task because somebody somewhere is going to take some little minuscule, trivial thing you said and try to make a big deal out of it. And that's not what I do. The information that you get is it's all important. It's vital to making a decision to either go forward or go right or go left, one or the other. So, all right, last but not least, coryza, a well-protected bacteria that does have a cell wall, lives very well outside the bird's body, spreads bird to bird very readily, very easily. Just picture this, everybody drinking out of the same drinker or several drinkers that all birds drink out of and eat out of, and you got this gooey, mucousy-looking snot running out of your nose, and you're leaving it behind for everybody else, Harriet and George and Bill and what have you. So they're all coming, eating and drinking and sucking up the coryza bacteria as they eat and drink. So it's a tough one from that standpoint, but that makes it much easier to spread around. And, you know, in all of these things so far, you've seen it from what I said with the LT, there are a lot of symptoms, the coughing, the sneezing, the rattle, the eye involvement, all mimic the same thing. But try to pick out the things that are that make them different, that are more unique to one than they would be to the other. And you will very rarely find all of these symptoms that I'm talking about with any one disease all at one time in an entire flock. You might find one bird have one set of symptoms, one have another set of symptoms, and another set of symptoms, and therein lies another problem trying to make the decision. But I think you take these things and you try to put them all together and you look at them as a whole, start weeding out what is common, and then focus in on the things that are showing you that are left. It's a process of elimination. Those things that are left that are unique or more likely to be with a particular type of disease, and then formulate your game plan from there. So with coryza, you're going to get the runny nose. You're going to get the mucus. Now, generally speaking, okay, with coryza, and this again will help separate it out from the others, when the coryza birds have true coryza, they generally will have a mucus that is more thick, more on the yellow side than the white side, but it might be a whitish-looking yellow, a bleached-out yellow, so to speak. Okay, and we're not looking generally at something that's flaming yellow. Okay, we're looking at something that we all know what mucus looks like, so I don't think there's too much to be left to your imagination there. Whereas when you look at the CRD and you look at the LT, they generally have a more watery, more viscous, so to speak, mucus, okay? It might take on a tinge of white, but it's usually much more liquidy. So therein lies another little tip that you could use to try to decide. Also, the coryza spreads very quickly, too, okay? Because it is a whole cell with a cell wall and is not as host-dependent as the mycoplasma would be. So you're going to see it spread quicker. You're going to see this thicker, less viscous mucus that would be between a opaquish white and a semi-bleached-out-looking yellow. It's pretty sticky, too. Lots of times with the coryza, when we get the eye involvement, we get that conjunctivitis we talked about with the other two. But sometimes with the coryza, what you'll see is the eyelids will actually stick together. Doesn't mean it can't happen with the other, but it's more likely to happen with the coryza, okay? So therein lies another one, a mucus. The eyes, just literally, you think you glued them shut with crazy glue. It takes a while, then hot water and cotton balls and soaking it to get it open. And, you've got to watch out for that. But one of the other things that you will notice with coryza is that because of this mucus, okay, and its stickiness and so on, the irritation to the eye and the nose and all of this to the bird is quite severe. So they have a tendency to wipe their head on their feathers. And so another tip for coryza versus the other two was you would start to see this yellow, whitish, sticky mucus start to build up on the bird's feathers. It might even end up just being dirty, and you might think it's just dirt, but it more than likely will be the bird wiping its face on its feathers to try to clean the mucus away from the nostrils and get this stuff away from the eye and that kind of thing. So there's another little tip for you that will push it more towards that than it may towards the others. All important information. is any of it 100% that you can really, really, really put your hat on? I'm going to say no, because I don't even operate that way. I go on on exactly what I'm telling you folks here now is exactly how I do it. I get a piece of paper and I start breaking it down. And that's why I ask some of the questions. It sounds crazy to people, but you know, one of the questions that I ask people when trying to help them out with their problems, I say, you know, first off, how long has it been going on? You know, how many birds you got? How many birds got the problem? Okay. You know, how fast is it spreading? All of these things. And then I, you know, even before this, I'll ask, I'll say, look, this sounds stupid, but I want to know, what makes you think these birds are sick, other than the fact that there might be some dead or whatever? You know, in other words, when you walked out the first day and you saw them, what did you see? Yesterday they were all healthy, but today you got a problem. So what is the first thing you saw? You say. And I don't need to know that the dog was barking and the cow was mooing and the cow jumped over the moon. Just need to know what you walked out that day and you saw when you opened up your chicken coop or you let them out or you saw them running around the yard or you sat on your five-gallon bucket. What did you see? And then we go from there. We start looking at it, try to make a decision, you know, as to what it could be. You know, another thing, you know, and this is more a rarity than common, so I didn't even bother to bring it up, but I'll just throw it out there. Infectious bronchitis could be a problem as well. And you take infectious bronchitis and throw mycoplasma in on top of that, that's an ugly deal. Okay? And infectious bronchitis is a virus. It's an upper respiratory deal, and you could see a lot of the same things you would see with the LT, the conjunctivitis in the eye, the mucus coming out of the nostrils, the coughing, sneezing, wheezing, rattle, all that stuff. And it also spreads like wildfire, too. You know, a couple birds today, a whole bunch tomorrow, everybody by 2-3 days. So, but it is more rare, see, so you don't hang your hat on egg drops syndrome, which doesn't really occur in this country, because you read it in a book and those symptoms fit, okay? And so you wouldn't look at it being an infectious bronchitis thing. Here's another thing, if you had infectious bronchitis, definitely going to affect your egg production, going to definitely affect your egg quality. The albumin inside the egg plus the eggshell quality on the outside is going to be possibly crinkly end eggs, possible slab-sided eggs, meaning almost flat on one side and round on the other, thin eggshells, eggshells that feel like sandpaper, eggshells that have extra deposits of calcium on them. None of those fit in the others, you see. None of those symptoms there fit in the others. So, and the fact that the bronchitis is more rare, as a matter of fact, I don't even sell the Newcastle bronchitis vaccines anymore because they're more trouble than they're worth. So that's one of the things there. So with the coryza, the runny nose, the mucus, usually thick versus loose compared to the others, more white to a bleached out yellow, very sticky, birds wiping their heads on their feathers, wiping their eyes, trying to get this stuff off, the eyes stuck together, or what we call crusty eyes, sneezing, coughing, rattling, fast spreading, okay? And some of the unique things that you would see there, again, would be the fast spreading, the crusty eyes, the thick mucus. Now, I want to address this real quick, too, because people say, well, I don't have coryza because I don't have the smell. The smell has, in a laboratory setting at least, has never been reproduced with a pure coryza organism. And the thinking then is, and still is to this day, that the smell is being caused by a secondary bacterial infection. So if you have an outbreak of coryza going on, it's perfectly normal not to have the smell. As a matter of fact, I, in a commercial setting where I've seen coryza, I have never seen the smell. Seen a lot of snot, a lot of yellow mucusy stuff, crusty eyes, and that kind of stuff, but I've never seen the smell. So if you have the smell, that you just have another complicating factor coming into the situation. And more than likely, the Pseudomonas or E. coli, those two are the most opportunistic out there, you know, for those types of things. Coryza, what would you use for it? Your sulfa drugs will work, but generally don't work to clear it up. If you were looking at a large flock and you wanted to cut your medication expenses, you could come in with sulfa dimethoxine for 5 to 6 days and then come back behind that with oxytetracycline concentrate mixed probably with calamiasin, pretty good combination for those two. most of that would be long-term, 5-6 days on the sulfadimethoxine, 10 to 14 days on the oxytet-gallimiacin combination. Our rule of thumb here in-house, our own program that's been working very well over the years, is that immediately after that, vaccinate every bird that has gotten over this, and it's a two-shot vaccination about 4 or 5 weeks apart, and anybody giving you trouble after 2 weeks after the last vaccination, got to go, because those are your carriers. This particular disease has what I call an unknown carrier state. You can be looking at a bird that's completely healthy, but it could be a carrier, and that's about 50-50 on that. So you can't tell by looking at them. Generally, what we do is we medicate them, we vaccinate them twice, and then we eliminate them. And that's generally the only way to get something like that under control. I've also gone the other way around, where somebody wanted to vaccinate, and we ended up vaccinating the birds, and some birds came down with what we deemed to be coryza, and those birds were eliminated right off the bat. And the vaccine can bring it out, which means that the problem was already there, because it is a killed vaccine, not capable of giving the bird the disease in any way, shape, or form. And so therefore, you know, when you look at this thing, if you vaccinate it and the birds start getting sick, and what I mean by sick, snotty noses, coughing, sneezing, all that stuff, they are more than likely carriers, and they need to be eliminated. And just go on and vaccinate everybody else, keep all the healthy ones. And by continual vaccination and elimination on a yearly basis, you can clean a flock up pretty well with this stuff. It's doable. But again, like I said in the beginning, time, effort, money. Not necessarily in that order. But the whole idea is to get on it, and get on it fast and get it taken care of, and you know the symptoms inside and out. Yeah, will you be wrong? Sure. I'm never right 100% of the time, ever. Like to be, but you know, do the best you can. And you know, I can't see him. You know, if you're there, you got a leg up on me by a long shot. You can see him. You know, you can. You know, the more information a person has that's trying to help you, whether it be me or anybody else, the better decision is going to be made as to what the issue might be and how to go about getting the proper program in place to either control it or get rid of it. In the case of CRD, MG, there is a killed vaccine available, has been for many years, since the middle 80s. They can be very effective, does not prevent a bird from becoming infected, but will stop the birds in about 95 to 98% of the cases from showing any symptoms whatsoever. Better to be vaccinated than not, in my opinion. There are other people who have other opinions, and like this one I've talked about 2 years in a row now, problem with LT, because they've done nothing about it. And, you know, that's their prerogative. Not my day to judge it one way or another. I'm just telling you about these situations because they do occur, and when you don't do anything about them, it ruins your year. You know, you get LT going through your flock, it's going to upset things. You're not going to be able to travel. You're going to have to vaccinate. You're going to have some mortality more than likely. And if you're hatching, it's going to create a problem there because you've got a place that's now exposed. You've got young birds going out to everybody all over here, there, and yonder. How do you control it? And, you know, they're not going to be born with it because with LT, it'll cause embryo mortality. If you had breeders that had an active infection at the time, it doesn't pass through the egg, so you don't have to worry about it that way, but it sure gets around the other way. Very, very hardy virus, one of the worst out there as far as spread is concerned. Any outbreak, if you have a fogging device or an opportunity to get one, borrow one, beg one, steal one, whatever, putting oxine in the fogger and then fogging it over the top of the birds with the building closed up for about 15 minutes, and then open it up and do that once or twice a day, depending on the severity of the problem, can help dramatically keep things under control until you get a handle on it. So I would advise, you know, looking at things that way. Biosecurity, by far. The more secure your premise is, the better off you are. And the less stuff you bring in from the outside, I don't care who's breeding them. I don't care. And I've seen it happen from the best to the worst. And some people know it and do it and don't care. Other people don't have a clue and do it accidentally. either way, you as the recipient end up paying, and so will your flock. And so I would keep as close to flock as I could, because I see it all the time. Somebody will post up a bird on one of the Facebook or one of the forums and stuff, and God Almighty, 40 or 50 people jump in. They got to have it. Got to have it. I don't know if I'd want it that quick. You know, I'd see these. Get the name of it right off the top of my head, but they come from Indonesia. These birds are totally black. Their eyes are black. Their tongue's black. Their mouth's black. Everything about them is black. They're beautiful birds. If I was going to, and I wouldn't, invest $5,000 in a bird or a pair of them, I would want them to be chrome-plated myself. That's a lot of money to be laying out for a bird and find out you get them in your place and they're sicker than a dog and they die on you. And I'm not saying they do. I know nothing about the people that sell them or anything. I'm not saying anything bad about them at all. All I'm stating is a fact that bird better have a pedigree as long as both your arms and legs and maybe your grandparents' legs as well before I put my $5,000 on the line and take it home. I mean, it better be free of, it better not have a feather out of place. But, you know, it's up to you. And you're the ones doing the buying. But I see it all the time, deal with it every day. So that's why this program was done today, and that's why we talked about these three things, because of the interaction of one with the other. It is possible to have more than one problem going at the same time. And sometimes you can address some of them, sometimes you can't. Your only way out of LT is to vaccinate. And you don't, you know, you vaccinate everybody, even the ones that have it with a mild strain, and take your lumps and go on. And that's the best you can do. And sometimes it'll still blow up in your face, so be aware of that. But it is a problem. It is out there, and it is in the backyard situations. It's not rampant yet, but we're dealing with it more and more and more. The mycoplasma, not a big deal. It really isn't. You know, you can mitigate that by vaccination and medication, and you can keep it well under control. You can even keep birds from being hatched with it if you know how to do it right. Vaccination of the breeding stock every 3 months with an inactivated vaccine and medicating the breeding flock for 10 days once a month should help keep it under control, keep it from spreading, because it'll only spread from the breeders to the egg if there's an active infection at the time of conception. So if you don't have an active infection going on, you're probably not going to spread it to the offspring. So you're not really going to be spreading it around as much as one might think. It's pretty much done, Andy, unless you got some questions.
No, I do. There's a few questions. We're going to take a commercial break, and then when we come back, we do have a few questions that were posted on Facebook, maybe three, when they saw you were going to be on today. They said, ooh, I'll take advantage of this and post a few questions. So we'll get to those questions as soon as we return after this short commercial break. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back with more Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on the special Tuesday episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, since, of course, yesterday was a holiday. Peter, you're back live. Let me get over here to the Facebook page where we had a few folks post some questions. Let me see and scroll down here. Here we go. Here's a couple of them. Okay. I have a question about the health ramifications of relocating chickens. We are moving, and I would like to know how I should prepare them and what to prepare for and what to do after we move. And oftentimes I'll talk to folks when we're talking about choosing the right breed for them and, getting their chicks. We do our workshops, and I tell folks that you may go out to a place, and this would just be one issue. I'll let Peter elaborate a little bit more. You may go out to a place, a very reputable chicken breeder. The place is beautiful. His birds are healthy. They're just impeccable. And you get, six or eight layers from him, per se. And you bring them home, and you might get an egg the next day. And you might even get an egg the following day. But next thing you know, they stop laying for 3 weeks to 3 months. And because of the stress. Anytime a hen gets stressed, even the least little bit, the first thing they're going to turn off is that egg-making machine inside of them. So I tell folks that the guy didn't scam you. You're not doing anything wrong. It's not that they're sick. But when you move them from one place to another, they're not only going to have a new place dealing with, okay, what predators are here. You just took six chickens out of a pack of 30. Now they're going to have to reestablish their own pecking order. They have to get used to you and their home and their coop and their run and the whole nine yards. So they're not thinking about laying that egg. They're thinking about survival and their new spot. So oftentimes, the number one thing I hear when people go and buy hens that are already laying, bringing them, moving them, or you take hens and you're moving to another location, is the first thing you might see. Well, why did I get an egg the first day and the second day? Because that egg may already have been developed and ready to pop out by the time you grabbed them from that breeder. Another yolk may have already dropped from the ovary and had started the process of being made before you moved them, and now they've cut off the egg-making machine. So that's one ramification that you might see, Dawn, when you move those chickens initially. But as far as the health concerns, maybe upping this, that, or the other regarding their maintaining their health, regarding the stress, I'm sure that Peter has some opinions of his own regarding that and moving your chickens. Peter?
Yeah, well, if you're moving from point A to point B, I think that, as calmly as it can be done, I mean, the tame of the birds are, the easy they are to catch, you need to put, you know, like birds with like birds. For instance, when we moved Tammy's bird from Michigan, 14-hour drive, you know, of course, we used my big van and stuff to take them all. So you had about 30 birds, chickens, two ducks, four cats, two dogs, and two humans. And, you know, stressful for all of them. And, you know, Tammy, knowing the makeup of her flock, was able to put the birds in carriers that hung out in groups together. So that cut down tremendously on the amount of stress, fighting, all those things that happen when you start to put birds together, who may not, you know, they may live in the same general environment, but they don't hang out together. You can go out here to the pen and you can watch the groups of birds that basically stay with each other, and they're split up all over the yard. And there's one spot where there's a group of them, they like to lay out there in the sun, and they're right out in the full sun, and there's others that are totally across the whole yard from them doing something else on the other side. And they never really all come together and congeal as a group. They want to hang out wherever they are. So the less stress you can put on them, the better you're going to be. There isn't any question about it. So, you know your birds, put like birds with like birds, those that get along. Troublemakers, put them by themselves. You know, if that's not an issue, then it doesn't matter at the end of the day, but it could be an issue. You want to make sure that before you travel, the birds are fed, hydrated, that kind of thing. If it's a long trip, you know, we had feed cups and water cups in each one. We put a larger water cup and didn't fill it up as much so that it didn't spill as easily. And then when we stopped, we were able to give them water in those cups, and so we kept them, kept them hydrated. We kept them fed. Keep your trip down as short as possible. The van was is air conditioned, and of course we had the air on high so that everybody was comfortable. You want to make sure that you don't put things so jammed up in that there's no air circulation around the pens that you've got them put in. Vitamins, electrolytes in the water go a long way to helping stabilize things, and then, make their new environment as best as you can make it. Change is tough for anybody, whether it be human or animal. And so when you start changing their environment, stay on top of things. Watch for those because, you're gonna change the dynamics of the whole flock just in catching them all up and moving them. And when you put them all back down, you'd swear to God that they didn't know each other. And those kinds of things. I would even start, 24 hours before with the vitamins, electrolytes, making sure that they're going to be able to, maintain their fluids and so on. And just, again, cut down as much stress as you can on both ends of the deal. The quieter the move can be within the vehicle that they're going to be traveling in, the less stops, the quicker you get them where you're going. All will keep the stress down. That's about all you can do. That's what we did. And in my opinion, we're very successful, moving the birds. Didn't seem to bother them one bit. We turned them all loose. They kind of said, oh, this is pretty cool. Everybody went to, it's like prize fighters going to their own corner after a knockdown. They head to the corners where they go, and that was pretty much it. So I would say those things, are really critical. The amount of stress you put them under by moving, the stress that they're going to be under when reunify everybody in the new place, new surroundings, new coop, whatever. And then the food and water before and during and after the travel should make all the difference in the world.
Okay, very good. That was great information, and we wish Dawn good luck with her move, and it is a smooth one. She's been a fan for a long time, so great advice, Peter. Jan says that she has a flock of 16 hens, 8 cream leg bars, and 8 Bielefelders. They are 16 weeks old. One of the cream leg bars had a beak injury when she was 8 weeks old. She lost half of her top beak. She seems to be doing fine since, but is really small in comparison to the other hens. Now, she was the smallest hen of the group before the injury, but she continues to be the smallest. Should I be feeding her anything special to help her grow faster?
I've been through this before where a bird had lost the majority of its beak, or a good portion of it anyway. And I would feed softer type foods to make it more palatable for her. Even a wet feed will help. Take some pellets, mash them up, or get some mash feed at the feed store, a small amount. Some places sell it in small bags, and make it damp. Don't have to be soaking wet, but make it damp and keep the feed deep, so that when they do get don't hit the bottom of the bowl or the feed container so easily and cause themselves either more pain or discomfort. But by and large, I don't think you necessarily need to feed anything any different, as long as the protein levels kept up for the bird's age. And I would guess that it is a matter of how much feed she's able to consume, given the circumstances, with the beak. That being said, if you want to try to add some protein to it that bird would probably like, a tablespoon or two per day of some hamburger meat that is higher in fat content, and just cook it so that it's cooked thoroughly, but don't cook it to death, and leave some of the fat in any of the juices you can put right on the feed. I think you'll find the bird will enjoy it, and that should help her put on some weight. And once she starts to gain a little bit of weight, she might be one of those ones that, because she was the smallest, she might be one of those ones that I wouldn't necessarily call it a failure to thrive, but they just don't do as well as their pen mates who were born bigger and got off to a better start. Usually birds that don't get off to a great start never finish up with, great. They just don't. And, for whatever the reason in this particular bird. But, given the beak situation, that's probably what I would do.
Okay. Awesome information. And we have one last one here. This one's it. Okay, that's fine. Let me get back over here to the last one we have for today. I have a question. I am a newbie to having backyard chickens. We bought 6 more chickens to add to our 2 hens. We bought 5 hens and a barred rock rooster. He was doing great. So now we're talking about the rooster, and the rooster has the problem. He was doing great the first few days, but then started limping. We think he banged up his leg when the seller was trying to catch him. He evaded capture for quite a while. Now he is still lame, barely getting up to eat and drink. I separated him from the hens a few days and cleaned what appeared to be a wound. It wasn't bleeding or infected, and I dressed it with antibiotic ointment. We are going on several days now, and he still isn't getting much better. The seller is offering to trade him for a red production rooster instead, but we really like this guy. He's good with the hens. He's not aggressive with our kids or our family. What would you recommend us do?
Well, they didn't say how deep the wound was. The fact that it may not, it may or may not be infected, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Just because it isn't oozing on the outside doesn't mean that something deeper might be going on. These things are always very, very difficult to get a bird over it. But what I would suggest as a starting point that will not hurt the bird in any way, shape, or form, I would give 3 to 4 Bear brand baby aspirins per day, one every in the morning. Noon and maybe the third one out, 5-6 o'clock, somewhere in that range, and see what that does for him. It won't hurt him at all. It's done all the time. I recommend it all the time. As a matter of fact, I recommended it to somebody on Facebook this morning, and I recommend it all the time. It doesn't hurt them, doesn't cost anything. I recommend the Bayer brand because it is the gold standard. You don't know what you're getting in the generics as far as I'm concerned. But that's where I would start. And if there is inflammation somewhere from being caught, she didn't say exactly where this wound was, did it? Did she?
No, not on the leg. Didn't specifically say.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know how the guy caught him and everything else, but catching, you know, catching roosters or chickens in general can turn ugly real quick because, you know, legs are pretty fragile and they want to get away and your arm is going 90 miles an hour and it hits a leg and just jerks them off their feet and stuff. And, you know, I've seen many, many times, you know, where people, you know, do that even with a chicken catcher. You know, they're nice tools to have, but you're not supposed to yank the bird's leg out of the socket once you hook the bird,
right.
You know. And, you know, sometimes a net works a lot better. But I would go with the Bayer aspirin from there and then keep an eye on the wound. When she says wound, we don't know how deep it is, whether it's superficial or not. We'll take her word for it that it's not infected, and, you know, she might want to look at an antibiotic down the road if she feels it's necessary. But I'd start with the Bayer baby aspirin. That's where I usually go, and usually, you know, after a while, you know, we see some results with it. Usually works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And one last, I lied to you. I saw one in the chat room here.
That's
from
right.
Becca, and she actually has... She was the one, I think the last time you were on, and we did Q&A, had the rescue chicken that she was dealing with, and she actually purchased some medicine from you and got it very quickly, was bragging about you in the chat room, Becca Boo in the chat room. And so here's her question. She went and looked at the directions and whatnot after listening to the podcast of using permethrin on her rescue chicken. And apparently she found after the fact that you're only supposed to dip up to the thigh, and so apparently she dipped the entire bird minus the head. So dipped the bird into the permethrin up to the, I guess, neck minus mm-hmm. the head, and mm-hmm. has since seen that it's just thigh deep with dipping the bird. Would you advise against dipping the entire hen?
No. What she's referring to is there's technically two sets of directions that come with the thing. One is the manufacturer's directions, and it's on the front label of the I don't like the way they do it, but it's an accordion-type thing. We've all seen them. You pull the, if you look at
right.
it, you pull the top right corner, you pull that down, and out fall all these directions still attached to the bottle. And on the back side of that, it'll tell you how to mix it up for spraying it on the birds and so on and so forth. If you want to dip the bird, that's fine. You can do that. It's a momentary thing.
I'll stand corrected. She just posted in the chat room. She hasn't done anything yet, just checking to see if one or the other is better.
If she's going to dip the bird, then she needs to follow the directions for mixing it as a spray for use on the birds on the inside of that label that came with the product. The
okay.
other one that she's talking about is one that I included so that she would have all of the directions, which was for dipping the bird for a scaly leg mite. And that tells you to dip them, you know, up to the thigh, come back 10 days later or so, or whatever, and do it again. It gives a specific direction, and that might be a little bit stronger. I can't remember. But either way, she's really not going to hurt them because you're going to, if you decide to dip the whole bird in the permethrin, I would get a tote, mix it up with the appropriate amount with water, and then I would put the bird in it and quickly run my fingers against the feathers so that the permethrin gets down to the skin and the bird is out. The bird shouldn't be in there forever. It's in and out. You want to get the feathers
mm-hmm.
nice and wet and out. And then the way I've done it in the past is just throw the bird out on the ground and they'll start shaking off all the excess immediately. And that's what needs to take place. And let them go dry, you know, take their baths and do whatever they want to go down in the dirt, let them do it. And but it's got to be a quick thing. You just don't... don't want them in the water for 5 minutes and everything else because this will absorb into the skin. So we want it to get down to the skin, and we want it to dry so that it has some residual value. But in the process, it'll kill everything it comes into contact with. So it's a great product for that thing, and I'm glad she asked that question, by the way. But it should stay those directions, I do believe, say for a scaly leg mite. But as far as dipping the whole bird, that should not be a problem. It's done all the time.
Okay, perfect. Good information. She says thank you very much. Very, very thorough. And she does listen to the archive a lot. One of the first times she actually has. Oh, and there's one more question. Thank you, Catherine, for pointing that out into the chat room. But Becca, I hope that answers your question, and good luck with treating that that rescue bird you got. And then last but not least, somebody else has that in the chat room. Red Hawk, who I know personally, she lives in Alabama. We won't hold that against her. She has some chickens with sauerkraut. Wanted a little bit of advice from you regarding that.
Sauerkraut caused by a number of different things can be a candida infection, which is basically yeast infection. Something that she can do is the apple cider vinegar in the water should help mitigate that. If that doesn't work, she can try acidified copper sulfate, quarter teaspoon to the gallon. And if that doesn't work, she needs to look and make sure that this crop is emptying. That whatever the bird is consuming is coming out the back end and not hanging around in the crop fermenting itself and causing more problems. So that there isn't some sort of other crop issue, a semi-crop bound or anything like that. But if it's just real, real squishy and stuff. And then last but not least, she could get some nystatin and run that down the bird and see. And if she wants that, we have it available on the website.
Okay.
Come up with
the
directions for use on it. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's perfect. They were talking about the time, and they are correct. We've got 3 minutes and 20 seconds left at this broadcast, so that's going to wrap it up. And I think that's got to everybody. So, Peter, thank you very much for the great topic of information we shared most of the hour and a half today. And then the few questions we did have when they saw you were coming on, they're like, Peter's going to be on. I'll take advantage of this. I've got a few questions. So those of you who ask questions, we appreciate those. And I know that, just so you know, folks listening, Peter, his regularly scheduled day is every single Monday. Yesterday was a holiday, so he was gracious enough to join us today. And then next week, he's got some weekend travel to a particular poultry show. So we will let you know over the weekend if it looks like we'll have Peter next Monday. If not, then we may try to reschedule him sometime later next week. But just if you ever want to know when Peter's going to be on the show, then just follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, and we let you know when he's going to be on. But his normal day is every single Monday. So, Peter, we are so glad you could join us today, and we hope you have a wonderful event this weekend. Safe travels and healthy travels, and I'll get with you for a show sometime next week when you know.
Yep, my pleasure, Andy.
All right, sounds great. Thank you so much. And that's going to wrap up another show here, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Just a little reminder, tomorrow is another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Thursday, we have poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, coming on. She's going to be talking about breeding and genetics. And that'll wrap up this week's show. We no longer do shows on Fridays, Monday through Thursdays, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. So we're so thank you all of you for joining us. Thanks for the big crowd in the chat room. Had a great time. And we hope you have a great day, and we hope you'll tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody. Oh,